One of the comments I've heard over the years, a lot recently, is that I talk so much that by the time I ask for questions, people don't want to ask them because they don't want the class to go on any longer. And so I'm going to talk really for a short time, and then I'm going to open it up for questions. So if you have questions you've been meaning to ask and have always felt you don't want the class to go on for 2 hours, crystallize them for a moment and ask them when I ask for that. Here's what I want to say. What we're doing here is very simple. It is a given that every one of your lives is stressful, complicated, exquisitely dense and rich, full of joy and conflict and love and sorrow and all of the stuff and all of the drama of human experience. It is very likely that you often feel trapped by all of that. The prescription for getting out of it, to feeling some relief from stress, from the drama of your life, from the emotionality of your existence, is to dive deep inside yourself. Diving deep involves sitting still. We call it meditating. Taking a moment out of time to allow yourself to drop below the surface of your tension, below the surface of your drama, below the complications of your existence, and just find a still point. That still point, when you're able to hold on to it for any length of time, which means not grabbing it by letting go, falling into it, swimming in it, dissolving into it, whatever you want to use as the imagery, you find a place that moves into the stillness and it just starts to go. It's so wonderfully embracing. It's so relaxing. It's so free of you. It's so free of all of the stuff that causes you all of your daily struggle. It's just a place to go. It's a refuge. It's inside you. And when you get there and you can relax enough and get still enough, you go, why don't I come here all the time? Why don't I do this regularly? And most of you don't do it regularly because that's the nature of human experience. We're so caught up in the surprise and wonder of life that we never think that we can get to this place of deep, deep release. It just takes practice, and it's really a muscle. And we have an exercise for it. Rudy gave us a really wonderful exercise called the double breath, and it takes you into your heart chakra. You breathe into it, you hold your breath, you stay there for 10 seconds, and you identify that space, you feel it, you welcome it, it welcomes you, you feel wonderful. You let out a little bit of that breath, you take a deeper breath into your belly chakra, you feel even more deeply immersed in the stillness. You may feel that rush of energy kind of moving up your spine and just giving you this sense of extraordinarily profound joy and comfort and release from all of the drama of your life. And then you just breathe, you relax, breathe normally, and you feel this incredible sense of just being. For however long you do that, you can step back from life and you become kind of an observer. Rather than in it, you just look at it and you realize you have a capacity to step back. You don't have to be caught by it. You don't have to be reactive to it. And out of that stillness comes this ability to engage life with some kind of awareness, presence, intelligence, compassion. So you interact with life with a kind of refinement. You don't interact with it out of tension, anger, drama, hostility, built up frustration. You just react to it gently. You find a way to live. It's a way of being. And the more you embrace that way of being, the more remarkable your life becomes. You can go very, very, very deep in this surrender. And you can get to a point of an awareness where you realize that your surface drama is only the tiniest little bit of who you are. And you can begin to live in the depth of your being. You can wake up to who you truly are. It may not happen immediately, it may take a while to get there, but it's just build this muscle of surrender. That's all it is. Let go, let go, let go. There are a million more things I can say about it. In a way, because I want to keep this short, let me just say one other thing. This class, or sitting with a teacher, someone who is surrendered and present, someone who is sharing that presence with you, makes it easier. It makes it possible to experience and identify this space. A teacher can actually give you some of what Rudy called their energy, or their Shaktipat, or their presence. And you, simply by being there to absorb it, can very gently draw it in, and it helps you feel your way into what I'm describing. It's a real gift. The gift of a teacher is that they share themselves with you. Can you do this on your own? Yes, you can. Do you need a teacher? No. Does it help to have a teacher? Yes, absolutely. More than one can imagine, really. I mean, I spent, you know, a year and a half traveling through Southeast Asia looking for a teacher, and I met a lot of people who were qualified, but no, they didn't resonate with me. I didn't resonate with them. Why I resonated with Rudy, I can't tell you, except, pop, I did. He was my teacher. When you find your teacher, sit down and do the work. Draw, take, emulate, live the teaching. And it gives you a remarkable life. That's all I can tell you. It gives you a life that is not defined by its stresses and tensions and dramas. There's a way out of that stuff. Not that they won't be there. I mean, life is life. You know, it's full of yin and yang. It's full of darkness and light. It's full of good and evil. It's got all that stuff. It's a great play, you know, but there is an off stage. You can get off stage. And if you're sitting around just trying to figure out how does my character react more deeply and more profoundly to the drama and the stress, you're not going to learn the lessons. Get off stage. Let somebody tell you this is just a character you're playing. You can take a breath and remember who you are. Bring yourself back to yourself. Let this class be a help. Let it direct you back into your core and find that there is something so simple in place for every human being, and it doesn't involve anything but sitting still. Sitting still. Give that to yourself. It's a gift. My talk. Questions? And don't tell me you don't have any questions, because then this is really not worth it. Let me put it this way. And Judy, I know you'll have them, because yeah, I know.
I wasn't going to ask one question.
Well, I can't believe that. But Let me just say, imagine that you have one question to ask the universe. The one question you're waiting to ask, what is that question? If you had one last question to ask, what would that be? And don't get all paranoid here, because you don't have to ask anything if you don't want to. But if there's a question that you have about spiritual life, about the practice, about your own life, about your own journey, this is the opportunity. God, everybody's uptight about it. Does I see a hand?
Yes.
Tom, thank you.
I'm very confused lately about the idea that all life is just a hologram. Can you help me explain that? I'm trying to make thoughts about it, and
do you believe that all life is a hologram?
I don't know.
Do you experience it that way at any point in time? Or are you just hearing that from other people like me?
No, I hear it from different sources, and I'm trying to incorporate it into my, you know, if that resonates with me, or if it's just not at all. But I'm just having such a hard time getting to that point of acknowledging it or accepting it. Or
why do you care?
I always want to know.
So it's a search for truth.
Yes.
And if I tell you something as an answer,
yes,
is that going to be the truth?
No, not necessarily.
No, probably not.
No.
So I will tell you my answer to that question, mm-hmm, but in no way should you believe it.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, it's just an answer. There's a great tradition in spiritual teaching that says life is an illusion. You can call it a hologram. I've called it virtual reality. Mm-hmm. There's another way to describe it. But it's something other than what it appears to be. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to imagine that it's something other than its appearance until you start to go really, really deep inside. And when you start to make that journey inside, you start to look at it a little bit differently. You start to see it not as concretized as it appears to be. It starts to break up a little bit. You start to feel that this isn't all there is. And when that starts to happen, you don't have to intellectualize, is this an illusion or a hologram or a virtual reality? You start to sense that it's not what it appears to be. And that begins to, in a way, affect the fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. And you start to question, what is this? That question is really at the core of the spiritual experience, of the drama that we are all undergoing, because somehow we know this can't be all there is. It's certainly not finite. It has an infinite aspect. It's not locked in. Every moment is different. Every moment is changing. It's in constant flux. This life is in constant motion, moving toward we don't know what. We don't know where it comes from. We don't kind of know where it goes. We know that at some point it's over for us as we know ourselves. This is the kind of the fact that we have. Being told in the middle of that journey that this influx experience is illusory doesn't do much for us, really. It doesn't satisfy. It's like it sets up a question mark that goes, huh, wow. So what do you do with that question mark, and is it really urgent to know it? Well, I can only relate to my own very specific experience, and I'm not going to try to throw the drug trip at you or anybody, but my experience 50 years ago this July, taking a drug called LSD, but there are lots of different initiatory drugs, exploded everything I ever knew about solidity and the world and life as we imagine it. It completely blew it apart, and it gave me an understanding of my infinite nature. It gave me a sense that there is, at the end of life, an implosion that draws us back into the unknown, unformed, unmanifested reality. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. And then I came away from that saying, what does that mean? And how do I understand that? And where do I go with that? And how do I come to grips with that weirdness? Because nobody in my life at that point had ever told me that was the case. Nobody had ever indicated it. So I started looking into teachings, and the teachings were, first of all from Asia, and Buddha and Hinduism, that talked about a lot of that kind of idea, the idea that life was an illusion and not what it appeared to be, and insubstantial, and that was very powerful. And then I found it was also true in Western teaching, in mystical teaching. So I began a journey to find that truth, and what I came to was Rudy. And Rudy, who began to sit me down and break me down and turn me into a place of great foundational sitting, quietude. And in that quietude, a different version of that universe presented itself. It was an oceanic sense of being. And then something completely unexpected and remarkable happened, which was the Bruce that was sitting there every day went poop. And then there was no Bruce really, or Bruce became really a speck in the ocean. But I was aware of both going on at the same time. So here I have this extraordinary sense of I am, and a sense as big as that is, that even that is not the answer. That there's something out there that I have now come to express as the unknown unknowable, or the unknowable unknown, however you want to call it. And it's just so beyond anything our conceptual mind will give us. I will tell you that one of the approaches to grasping any understanding of what I'm talking about is the idea that this reality that we're in is holographic or virtual. It doesn't mean anything because it's still the reality that we're in. But I know from coming at this from the drug experience and 50 years of meditating and sitting that this is only an aspect, a formulated, manifested aspect of something that is eternal, vast, infinite, and truly bigger than anything this is or represents. That's all I know. And to tell you this is it, this is holographic, makes you go, well, then it's not what it seems to be, or this is virtual. But doesn't, if it's virtual, it's still this. It's still this. I was walking to get the newspaper this morning, and I had this experience that was just like when I did the virtual reality thing at Oculus Rift, and it was really interesting. Oculus Rift is not completely, they're getting there, but there's a little bit of a grid system that you can see the reality through, like a screen door. And it's really interesting. It's pixelated, just the tiniest little bit. And you can tell that that's what's different about their reality and this reality, because this reality is not pixelated. But walking up the driveway, everything pixelated. And I completely saw this morning that this was all virtual. Virtual reality, but it locks into such profound definition, enormous compressed pixels that we sense it as being completely real. And I also understood, and I do understand, my emotions and my emotional life and my spiritual life and my romantic life, my interrelated life with everybody is all part of this remarkable holographic thing. It is unexplainable, totally unexplainable, but it is experiential. And how do we get there? Will sitting and meditating do it? I sat for years with Rudy and I didn't quite get to that. I got to this place of the, what I will call, again, the oceanic blissful vastness. The disappearing of Bruce was another layer of something. But I'm trying not to sell drug experience because I don't want to push that. But somehow that that blew everything out of the water for me. And so when I had that experience not long ago of nitrous oxide returning me to that earlier LSD experience, I'm getting these pictures from so many directions, from the oceanic within, from the virtual without, and I'm left with this amazing sense of not knowing. But I know that what I know is so other than the locked-in personal drama that most of us are caught up in every day. It's so beyond that. It's so what I would call godlike. I am in touch with God as the vast, incomprehensible truth. That's what I'm in touch with. So virtual reality fits right into that. It just does. It's just like, okay, why not virtual reality? Why not holographic reality? Why not have it be some construct that is manifested and created by something we cannot grasp? And wanting to touch that, well, there are ways. There are ways to touch it. Do I want to tell you to go there? I'd probably not. But what I would tell you is it doesn't matter because it doesn't give you the answer. None of it gives you the answer. You are the answer, whatever that means. You are the mere fact of your existence is the answer. The big thing is, what's the question? What's the question? What is this? What is this amazing reality that we're in, whether it's virtual or not virtual, holographic or not holographic? It's this, and we're here. This is not a joke. It's not a play toy. It's not a happenstance. It's occurred. It's occurred for some vast, unknowable reason. It feels like it has a reason. If there's no reason, it's still here. And we have to find a way to work with that. And it's so much more remarkable to live a life in touch with the vastness of this unknown than to live a life where you're just worried about, you know, can you afford the gas for the car? You know, that's fine. A lot of people live with that, and the tension of that, and the drama of that, but it's nothing compared to what we are. Nothing. And the journey into what we are will come from sitting still, opening, and looking. And then these questions will come up. You will not get the answer mentally. And you might. I mean, you'll get an answer, but I can only tell you, and I've been saying this a lot recently, no answer will be the answer, because it will just be something you have conceptualized, and any concept will always be a concept, and it won't hold up to the ultimate that we are all part of. It can't be defined by the ultimate. And that is so, I was going to say it's so vast, but it might also be so small that nothing can get through. You know, the eye of the needle. Nothing can go through the eye of the needle. All of your ideas can't pass through it. It's too tiny and too big. So I propose, one, discover the wonder of all of this and live there. It's a great life. It's an amazing life. I don't know what else to offer. I've always wanted to give people prescriptions to what this is about. How we got here, where do we come from, the answers, you know, and a lot of people do. Even in our practice, a lot of people give you the answers as though they know. And I was certainly guilty of that. Or guilty may be the wrong word. I certainly wanted to be one of those people. Now I can't be that anymore. And so by not giving you the answer, I think I'm doing you a favor. I really do. I mean, maybe not. Maybe you'll all disagree with me and go, well, I'm looking for the answers and go where they are. But I can tell you, I don't think they exist, not in any way that we'll ever get. But that's okay, because what we are is the answer. We are it. And you'll never get it, but you are it. And be it, and live it, and find the enormity of wonder in being it. Because it is, hour by hour, minute to minute, second to second, it's like, that's my answer to holographic reality.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't know who has.
Okay. Yeah.
Dean.
I've been practicing Nichiren Shoshu with my partner, and they seem to have a lot of tension around, like, trying to practice multiple practices, or I don't know. I felt like it's cumulative, and I really enjoyed, like,
connecting with more people, and but I don't want to lose this practice. And I don't know, I was just generally looking for a reflection of, like, is it bad? Is it, it shouldn't be bad, I don't think.
I have a dangerous reaction to that, and you may not want to hear it.
No, I think you're like, choose.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I went to their main temple in Japan, and I watched people dropping money into a hole in the this thing on the floor. And I watched people looked underneath there, and people were shoveling, literally sweeping money into piles.
Yeah.
And everyone who dropped money in was wishing for something.
That's a different.
Well, I don't know what that was.
Yeah, it was something else. But yeah.
Whatever it was.
I saw that.
I just went, okay, wish fulfillment, whatever it is. I can't tell you. I don't know the practice. I don't know any of the practices. I can only tell you that there are multiple world religions and multiple theologies and multiple ways of trying to have an answer that you can hold on to. If you get an answer you can hold on to, good luck. You will very likely find it helpful in your life, which is good, and it may help you beyond that. But at some point, nothing will hold together. Nothing will ultimately make sense. And wanting it to make sense means there's a you and an it. Wanting it to make sense means that you, little you, can grab that. Can't happen, I don't think. And if it does happen, it's not because you grabbed it, but because it grabbed you. And that's kind of what does happen. And when that, I think, does happen, the questions go away because, like I say, you are that. You are whatever that is. And the little thing that wants to know it is fighting for its own separate identity. And that fight for your separate identity is at the very root of our suffering. Because we're not separate. We are not two, we're one. There's one thing here. And I have to say, sitting in this class with each of you, as separate as we all are, there's oneness. And it's a profound, joyful connectivity that I feel blessed to experience, and I try to share it with each of you. And I think there's a moment where each of you, maybe more than a moment, get it. And you get it, you go, oh. And you know what it is? It's like being loved. That's what it's like. It's like, oh my God, I'm loved. You know, either by, you think it's Bruce, but believe me, it's not Bruce. I'm not capable of that. Bruce isn't. But this thing is. And it's all I can tell you. And learning to give yourself over to that is what it's about. If there is a religion that has the key to it, that's fine if you really kind of believe it. But I have to tell you, as long as it keeps you hoping to be separate from something, hoping to be better than, infinitely more aware than, you know, to be saved as opposed to those who are not saved. You know, all of these qualities of religious belief keep you separate. You know, maybe some don't, and maybe I don't know about them, and maybe there are people who find their way through their religion to what I'm trying to talk about here, in which case then I'm wrong. And I'm happy to be wrong, because I would love everybody to find their path to self, to oneness. But if it keeps you feeling superior, separate, different, other, whatever, it has something problematic at the root. And one has to look, I say has to like it means something. You don't have to do anything. The universe doesn't care. It doesn't care. I mean, yes, it would like you to be aware, I suppose, of who you are, but it's just as happy to have you lost in the drama because it seems to be really caught. Engaged in our drama. It loves it, as do we, until we hate it, until it's too painful, too stressful, and then we say, help me. And then help's available if you want it. Or you can go deeper in the pain. You can go really far into it. It doesn't seem to care. But at the right time, hopefully it will bring you back. I'm not sure when that occurs for everybody. But it occurs at some very deeply felt true moment. It's not casual. It's not a casual asking for help, and it's not a casual response. It's like the cry of the heart, the absolute cry of being. That's when it gets answered. And it can't be occasional. It can't be, you can't do it 12 times. You gotta, it's like this, I really mean it. You know, and if people are casual about it, boy who cried wolf kind of thing, it doesn't respond. You know, you have to finally go, I need this. You know, people who quit drugs 12 times, you know, no one's going to believe you the 13th. You know, they're not, you know, why should they? You've got to take this seriously. You've got, this is real. The business of spiritual evolvement or growing or awakening or anything is real business. It's the real thing. And if you aren't worthy of it or feel worthy of it, bad words really, because worthy isn't the right one. If you aren't ready for it, if you're not committed to it, next time. You know, they don't care. Next time. You'll get it. You'll get it when the time comes. You know, 4,000 lifetimes from now, if there's such a thing, something in you will go, I can't do this anymore. Enough. Enough. And then you're ready. And you'll come to another class like this. And somebody will be sitting there who will be saying the same things, I think, that I'm saying in words that will make sense to you. And then you'll go, ah, you'll get it. The separate person will dissolve and you'll be back to where you are in the arms of the infinite truth, whatever that truth is. Okay?
I've been meditating for about 4 or 5 years, and just recently I've started noticing, and probably I have, that I don't get to the quiet moment. In fact, I've thought of the double breath practice for me as a very forceful, and sometimes maybe just sitting still. I haven't tried another practice, but seems to bring that. And I think
the
quietude. Uh-huh. Like just sometimes during the day, you know, or something else might happen, and I find myself there and I want to hold on to it. And so I want to thank you for bringing the concept also of just hold on to it by letting go. And also, as I was listening to you talk, I want to thank you because, you know, I think deep down inside, I don't think I can do it, you know. And so the question I would want to ask is, you said starting to develop that muscle in, let's say, in this practice, or how, where do I start? Where does...
You've started.
You know, because thank you. But I know you've said, like, take a breath. But sometimes that doesn't work, or, you know, and, like, just to start that letting go. Because I know when it does happen, it kind of brings me back to me.
Well, it's practice. You know, I mean, for years I did nothing but sit every day. You know, and some days I was really good at it, and some days I was terrible, and some days I had a deep reaction to it, and some days I didn't. But every day I sat. I don't know why I was so committed. I think, again, to go back to the LSD, I guess, I was shattered by that. I was shattered, and I knew this was not a journey that was a casual interest. This was like existentially meaningful to me. I had to get there. And knowing that you have to get there, whatever that may be, because you're going to be deluded about what that means for a long time, but having this awakening, having this truth come through, for me was everything, everything. I was willing to give everything to it, and I have. I mean, I just have, over and over and over and over. It kind of has to come down to that. It's got to become something more than just a curiosity or a casual interest. You have to just sit and build this into the system. I was lucky because I had no choice. I had to get to the core of what this was. Clearly, this life was about that for me, and it remains that to this second. And this unfolding that's happening, I could say, I'm there, but I don't, it's going on, it's still going on, even as we speak right now. So whatever it is, it's a serious, earnest, let me put it that way, it's an earnest approach to this practice. It's, I want this, I need this, and being willing to sit every day and find this center. And on good days and on bad days, when you want to and when you don't want to, you sit and you find this thing and you develop a capacity to do it so that when you need it, it's there. You know, you don't want to have to be one of those people who, you know, who lifts a car off of somebody once in your life and has the strength for that one day and then never has it again. You know, I mean, there are people who, if they really need it, it will come through. But how do you do it every day? How do you do it in the middle of a day where things are really not working out for you? How do you do it when you're really angry at something, or when you're really betrayed by the world, or, you know, your dreams have just fallen apart, or whatever that thing may be? How do you do it then? By having a system in place. You just go in there. I call it, you know, Rudy used to say, just take a breath. That alone is really helpful. But that breath to have impact involves meaning that you sit every day and you figure out what that breath is and what it feels like when it goes into your heart, what it feels like when it gets into your belly, you know, when it gets into your sex, when it rises up your spine and when it really flowers and it really gives you a very dynamic and full life. It's incredible. I don't meet many people who want it that badly. I don't. I really wish I did. I attract people who want it. Otherwise, none of you would be sitting here. There's a want here, and it brings you here kind of on a weekly basis. So there's something being expressed. I can address that. I will show up for you every time you sit here. And I guess, in a way, the I who's behind the Bruce will show up for you every time you sit, if you want that. But if you don't want it and don't want it at that level, you'll get it at the level you want it, but that might not be very deep or very profound or particularly meaningful. It'll be better than nothing, I suppose. You kind of get it the way you need it and the way you express your need for it. And I worry about the casual version of this because it kind of shows up sometimes and it doesn't show up other times. But that's kind of the effort that's being made. Okay, I'll take a little bit of that now. Okay, today I should go to class. Today I feel like it. Oh, it's Sunday and it's a beautiful day. I don't want to go to class. I'm not trying to get you to come to class, but I'm trying to get you to understand the persistent need for going deep in yourself if you want this to be real. I've said this now a lot in the last few weeks, but Buddha said 2 in a million get there. Why 2 in a million? Because you do the math, 999,998 don't want it enough. So who are you going to be in that equation? Do you want to be of the two? You certainly are coming here, so there's something putting you up in, let's say, in the top 50,000 maybe, or 100,000, but there's only two. And I don't know if it's really only two, and it's very self-selected. Do you want this? Do you want it? Probably, but when I say, do you want it enough? That's the tricky part. As far as I can tell, the universe will deliver to anyone who really wants it. Who really, really wants it. But boy, that's a very self-selected group. You're in that group. And you can have it. You can have it all. It's being given. It's really being given, even as we speak. Take hold. Take hold. Be one with it. Love it. Say yes to it. And I don't even know what that means, except that you want to be very responsive to the moment-to-moment dynamic reality of your life. It's not just something happening. It's really happening. It's really emanating from infinite time and space into this very concrete moment. It's so vibrantly there. And to miss that, to miss the infinite in the mundane is sad. It's just sad, because God is in your life at every second, every second. I don't know how to get that across. You are impacting and existing with and interacting with God all the time. And everybody's going, oh God, they didn't have Cheerios at the supermarket today. You know, and it's so painful, because it's like, how do you exist in the presence of divine truth and not catch it, not even glimpse it for a second? That's the great suffering at the end of life, the realization that you have always been there and never seen it. Not seen it. For many people, barely for a second. And so there are people like me, and there are a lot of us out there just saying, this is the time, this is the moment, do it, do it. Wake up. Right here it is. Here it is, yeah. It's kind of that. It's that. Oh. And even if you get it for a second, at least you got it for a second, you know? And you can have it all day long. That's the amazing thing. And then when you get it all day long, everything kind of changes. It's hard to describe it because I'm just living it at this point. I keep describing recently uncharted waters. That's exactly what it feels like. Nothing is knowable anymore. Nothing. But boy, is that alive. It's so alive, you know, and it's so full. Or sometimes empty. you know? But you look at it and you go, ooh, boy, is that empty. Wow, is that full? It's all shockingly, it's all whatever it is, you know, and you realize it is what it is. And then what do you even say about it? That's one of the reasons to keep my talks short, you know, because what do you say? Although you, clearly I don't stop. But it really is, it's amazing. It's, you're living in an amazing reality, and if you're missing it, it's kind of a choice. It's kind of a choice. I think I'm going to miss it this time. I'm just going to live in oblivion. I'm going to live in my unconscious, illusionary life, you know, which is fine. It's relaxing in a way to do that. It's not, I can't say that living awake is a relaxing experience. It's really something, it's something else. It's full. It's really full. And it can get fuller and fuller and move faster and faster and get bigger and bigger. You almost can't imagine how big it gets. And it can keep moving. And all you have to do is show up. But it's a totally remarkable journey. Anybody else?
You know, I practiced Sufism since I was 20. It's about almost 40 years. And Sufism is very similar to Zen and Buddhism in that respect. And the way that Ruby also and you're talking about the being awakened or getting to that point of who you are. And I have received some gifts from my Sufi master, and I maybe had a few epiphanies and experiences, but I never felt, when I read their poetries and like Attar, Rumi, Hafiz, and when I read their poetries, I think, I feel that I'm not there yet, you know, and I feel that I'm still not awakened. And I like, you know, after 40 years or 30 years, I wake up. And so how can we facilitate that or expedite that in some way? It's just...
You know, it's such a good question and one that I used to ask all the time, because at one point I started being surrounded by awakened people and I just said, why them? Why are they awake and I'm not awake? I've been sitting like you at that point for 40 some years, and I kept going, I don't understand why it's not happening, and I don't have an answer for you other than the answer that I came to, and it's not even an answer. I just gave up. I just said, oh well, I will be unawakened. Whatever I've got is pretty good. You know, I was very. I think I've mentioned this 4,000 times, but when I went to one of these gatherings of all of these awakened people, I considered myself the token unawakened guy. Mm-hmm. That was my role. I was the unawakened guy. And then they would come up to me, some of these people, and would say, you know, you're really awakened, you just don't know it. And I would go, well, I don't know what to do with that. I mean, I really don't, and didn't. Although I must now tell you, when I go back to my talks that preceded the awakening, they didn't say anything different than what I've said post-awakening. I was giving the same talks. The only thing that happened was somehow, out of nowhere, when I finally gave up trying to get anywhere, the person who was trying disappeared. And I can't say he left forever, because clearly there's still somebody sitting here named Bruce, right? But what happened is the separation, the door that separated me from myself just kind of opened. That's all. And so there I was, the self and Bruce, all one thing, not two. And what I don't know what that is. And on one level, it's very desirable. On another level, it's what was always the case. It's just I didn't know it. I didn't realize it. Does it matter if you realize it? Maybe not. I mean, maybe. I definitely talk a lot more about it. You know, and I can express, I think, a certain amount of firsthand awe at what it is, but I don't think I know that much more. In fact, I think I know less. Bruce knew a lot more than I know. You know, so it's really kind of fascinating. But knowing that you don't know, and this is classical stuff, mm-hmm. is a profound awareness. Because you just give up holding on to any truth or knowledge other than the thing that's flowing through at the moment. your frustration, if it can get to a heightened point, perhaps, like where it's not just intellectually frustrated or occasionally upset, but like it becomes an announcement to the universe, like, look, guys, I'm upset here. I've sat for 40 years and you haven't opened that door. And if you don't open that door, I'm going to be really pissed. I don't know if they'll react to that or not, but I would say that kind of knocking, knock and it shall be opened unto you, makes sense to me. Ask and ye shall receive. Something in you has to want that, has to really want the responsibility of that, because it is responsible. You do become a voice for something very big, you know, and you have to want to own that. And they know when you do. I mean, I don't know what they are. Rudy called it the guys upstairs, but something knows when you do. I know that you are capable and ready for that. I know that you are. I also know that you're like that far away from it. So that's all I can tell you. You know, some of my friends would call it you're ready to pop. But it needs a little more heat. You know, the popcorn, if it's just 1 degree too low, it's not going to pop. So it's just got the heat has to come up. You've got to keep that going so that it does. And then when it does, everything changes and nothing changes. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that at that point. You know, it's like it. I can only tell you that if it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter. I know that doesn't make sense, but it doesn't matter because your life, knowing you, will be as kindly and compassionate a life as you have already lived. It's already in you. You're not going to become a different kind of person. You're going to be the same person. You're going to give the same consideration to others that you have all your life. So it would be beautiful on one level and inconsequential on another.
But why knocking on the door? There is no door.
Yes and no. You know, I mean, that's easy to say. there's no door. I mean, it's classic, you know, ask and ye shall receive, knock and ye shall be opened unto you, seek and ye shall find. There is truth to that. And there is...
It's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor, but the door...
If there's a door, just open it.
That's a wonderful idea.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yes, it's a wonderful idea. Sometimes you have to sit outside that door for 30 years before you realize that that's the answer. Mm-hmm. You know? Because the door will be opened, but who opens it? You know, it's beautiful to think that you do. To go to the handle and do it. But it's really something within you that kind of opens it and lets you in. But it's not other than you. Mm-hmm. But you know, the mind can get confused by that thought, even though it's a wonderful kind of like a Zen kind of thought. But I do think there's a price to be paid for the door to open. If that door opens too early for you, it's a little bit like psychosis. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not ready to see the vision of what is awaiting you, it's hard to handle. And I worry for people who do get there too soon. You know, it's one of the problems with drugs, to be honest. I mean, it opens it way too soon for most people. And I think a few people go on a pursuit of what was that, and some people just go into an institution. You know, it depends on your availability to it. But I think the journey of opening is an announcement to the universe that you're here and you're ready and thy will be done.
What you just said, I've been reading about Nityananda, and I mean, he was like a magical fairy tale character.
That's how he's depicted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Chetananda said eccentric and whatever, you know, just correct me or whatever.
I don't know. Okay, I never met him.
At the end of his life, he said, you know, I won't go if someone will take what I have to give. And no one did, and he went. And if you know, and I go, well, if I was sitting in front of him and I know this guy stands naked in a tree and throws leaves and he's, you know, and I'm like, okay. So there's something, like, even today coming here and what you're talking about now is gelled it, there's something very terrifying for me. And I think it is losing your mind. And people, you know, I've heard of people going too fast, and you know, you're retired, so you're all set here, right? The day's okay. When you have, but the spiritual and the physical with Rudy, you got to still function at your job, like a lot of us function at our job and be high powered. And I don't want, and I see what my terror is. It's of opening so much that I can only put a lid on a toothpaste tube for a living, but I know there's machines for that now, so I'm not quite sure where it would land me. No, do you know what I mean? Because I get
Let me just say, one, I had a career during the entire time I was with Rudy. You know, I worked as a museum curator, I worked at teaching in college, I worked ultimately in the film business, and I made movies, I wrote movies, I taught and I attended classes the whole time. I never missed a day's practice. I sat twice a day in the morning and at night. I kept this thing going. It never got in the way. If anything, it added to my work, to my work ethic, to my being available, to also having a wife and two children who needed attention, of which I was sometimes good at and sometimes not. But I worked my life. And as Rudy said, life is the teacher. Life is what you're growing with. It's not that this awakening or this information coming in is going to make it hard to function in the world. If anything, the world becomes the one place where it becomes meaningful. You can take all of this energy and have a really big life. I don't think it separates you from your career and your, you know, your day-to-day existence. It all works together. It's all one thing.
It would probably change it. Like, you, after your awakening, I know you say your talks were the same, but it changed, and you said you know less.
Yes, that's been going on more and more. As we've talked here, there's been more of an unfolding that I have gone through, but it doesn't affect my babysitting every, you know, I babysit with my grandchildren, you know. I still am working on a book. I mean, there's so many things that are happening in my day-to-day life. It's a rich, full life, and all of this stuff is happening at the same time. It's all part of one thing. There's no going crazy in it. There's just like getting out of the way and letting it all happen. Get out of the way and keep it going. I mean, I put some dampers on it. I was, you know, supposed to go to Shanghai at the end of this month. I just said no. I don't need to travel. You know, there are a lot of things in my life that I just suddenly realized I don't need the outer manifestation. I just need the simple inner life. And I'm finding a very simple, beautiful day-to-day life that keeps me very happy. You know, and so the outer drama that used to seduce me so readily doesn't seduce me at this point. And I think that's the real value of the awakening, is like I just go, I don't need very much. You know, I really don't. I wake up in the day and I go, what will arise today? And I watch, and it always does. Stuff arises every day, and some of it very demanding. Some of it not so demanding. Some of it just fun. Whatever it is, that's my life. And it's great. Yes, I'm retired, you know, but I never, in the time of my journey, ever didn't practice spiritual life because I was busy or because I had other demands. Rudy taught me that all those demands were my spiritual life. That's what it is. It's not that life, spiritual life, and your material life. It's one life. And that was the great thing about Rudy's teaching. I didn't have to live in a monastery or an ashram and be pure and devote myself to, you know, just meditating and meditating. The opposite. I needed to devote myself to living.
And your spiritual life is going to help you in your daily life.
Absolutely. That's one thing.
So that's yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the key to it.
There's no fear. I understand your fear. I really do understand. I don't mean not to empathize with it, because losing the mind, losing your mind, seems like a terrible thing to lose.
Or being so expansive and living in that bliss that nothing really matters.
It's nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. It feels like for me as well, I'm totally getting that. Was actually part of my question. I feel like I'm dancing, kind of the dance of surrendering and being, and then having the minutia of life that you still have to tend to, because if you don't, your daily life's not going to work.
Ultimately, your daily life is infinite space focused into minutia. That's all it is. And it's not going to be other. You're going to have bored moments, you're going to have happy moments, you're going to have sad moments. You're going to have moments of activity, moments of sleep, moments of good food, moments of grabbing a hot dog. You're going to have whatever it is. That's what it is. You don't lose anything. It's just gain and gain in a way. It's bigger and bigger awareness and appreciation of what is. It's not... The minutiae is it. That's all I can tell you. Your minute-to-minute life is an imprint of eternal truth. And it sounds crazy, because how could this little stuff of our life be that? But it is that. It's vast. And when you finally awaken, you awaken to that. You awaken to, I'm bored to death right now. You read a magazine. You turn on the TV. It's why it all exists. It's all there for you. You do what you do, but you do it with a sense of, oh my God, they gave me Downton Abbey. You know, Blanche and I are so caught up, and we're watching Downton Abbey. We're in the last episode of the fifth season, and we've been kind of, binge watching. We are so caught in that world, and I keep looking at it. It is instructing me. It is teaching me. I am so thrilled by the fact that I've been given something that at 9 o'clock at night, I just sit back and get swept up in another world. You know, there are movies, there are game shows, there's everything out there that keeps us entertained, that keeps us engaged in this infinite space that we're in. Wow. What a thing. What an amazing thing. Now, you can get lost in it and never connect with yourself, or you can be in that and go, what a gift. What an amazing gift. So don't be afraid of overwhelm. It's not overwhelming at all. It's the opposite. It's like realizing that the underwhelming is really incredible.
You once said that the people who come here are the black sheep of the black sheep.
Well, somebody once... Yeah, go ahead. Ask.
Well, I guess too, do you feel really different than other people? Like, I mean, you feel the same. After your awakening.
No, you don't feel. I don't feel different.
Different. Okay.
No, I just feel whole. And I didn't feel whole. And I can't even say that whole is a static whole. I feel like that which feeds into me is aware of itself. That which I am is aware of itself, rather than being Bruce and wondering, who am I, what is this, how did I get here, what's going on. I'm just here. I'm just who I am, who we all are. But I'm not sitting around stressed about it. I'm just going, I am this thing, but I don't know what this thing is, but I know I am that. I am that. And that's all. And as for black sheep in the family, which is it was not my line, as someone who used to study with Swami Chaitanananda, she said she realized once that we were all the black sheep of the family. And what that really means is that most people who are not the black sheep select to be in the family and live the life of the family. People who are the black sheep who are on the outside are the ones who begin to look at what is all this, because they're not included in the warmth and the embrace of the familiar. They are looking for embrace, and they begin the search. And that search for a true embrace is bigger than the false embrace of the family, because you find the embrace of being. And that's what we're all searching for in the end. So if you're a black sheep of the family, you have a head start on finding who you are. It's helpful.
Yeah.